recorded.
Okay, so to recap and to bring us further. So we've been talking about this prohibition of Gneivas Das through our Gemara in Chulin, and we're trying to understand what it's about. We know that Rashi defines it as Machzik Tov Bechinam, that we are getting credit that we don't deserve. And we saw different views in the Rishonim as to how to categorize where the Isser is coming from. Basically, three possibilities. Is it a prohibition of Sheker? Is it a prohibition of Geneva? And in which case, it could break down into a couple of different items or values that might be stolen here. Or is it an aspect of verbal oppression of Onos Dvarim? And we also then discussed the possibility that it's Drabanan and went through how that would relate to each of those possible categories. And we also talked about how some of the exceptions, and we haven't seen all of the exceptions yet, but we focused on two of the exceptions, which seemed to work better initially from a Sheker perspective than a Gneiva perspective, but we tried to explain it for both. How, for example, the idea that if the individual fools himself, you don't do any fooling, but you don't try to do any fooling, he just happens to come to an unjustified conclusion on his own. So that is a issue that is it viewed differently. So if you see it from the perspective of Sheker, it's more easily understood. From the perspective of Gneiva, it was a little harder to understand. And also the idea that it's okay for his own good, so to speak. So that works better for Sheker, where we find there is a heter mipnei hashalom. And when it comes to Gneiva, we know that's not true, that you're not allowed to steal from somebody even if you're benefiting them somehow by stealing. And again, we talked about how maybe still we could understand it. Okay, so let's pick it up from there and let's expand on some of those points. So first of all, where does the Rambam fit into this whole story? So you got a chance to see the Rambams. There are at least two Rambams in Mishneh Torah. What would you say is the Rambam's stance on this? Where does he fit in? So, yeah, Ari?
I mean, there seems to be two components. We see that the Rambam lists it in his Hilchos Mechira. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be more of like, you know, a legalistic, you know, stealing kind of things. But he also has it listed in Hilchos Deos, which is more of just like a be a nice person thing, which seems more like rabbinic institution, or just don't lie.
Okay, excellent point. So we'll look at the Rambams together, but okay, Rambam, think of both Rambams here. But if you look at the Rambams together, so the language is important, but Ari caught on to an important detail here that you don't even have to actually read the words. So here you could just read the Makoros list, and you might already catch on to a certain insight, as Ari correctly pointed out, that it's worth noting that the Rambam records it twice. That we have, on the one hand, in Hilchos Mechira, in the first halach in Perek Yudches, so his lashon is, Aser lirmos es bnei adam b'mekach u'memkar, o lignov es daitam. So we're not allowed to deceive people in commerce, or to be gonev their das, v'echad goyim, v'echad Yisrael b'dav rezeh. It's true whether you're talking to a Jew or a non-Jew. Hayyodeya sheyesh v'mkaromum yodiyo l'lokeach. If you know that the item you're selling has some kind of a flaw, you should tell the purchaser. V'afilu lignov das habrios b'dvarim aser. And even just to do so with words is prohibited. So here you have it brought in Hilchos Mechira. And in Hilchos Deis, you also find it, the same halacha, even though it's phrased differently. So the language in Hilchos Deis, in Perek Beis Halacha Vav, is Aser la'adam lahanig atzmo b'divrei halakos u'pitoi. A person should not carry himself in a sneaky, deceiving kind of way. V'lo yeh echad b'peh v'echad b'leiv. And he shouldn't be one way in his heart and one way in his speech. Ella tocho kavaro. He should be sincere. His outside should be like his inside. V'inyan shebalev hu davar shebepeh. That which is in his heart should be what he is saying. V'asu lignov das abrios v'afilo das anachri. And one should not deceive anyone, not Jew or non-Jew. You shouldn't sell to this non-Jew a basar nevela and represent it as shchuta, and not a shoe of an animal that died on its own as represented as the shoe of a shchuta. And you shouldn't pressure somebody to eat by you, even though you know he's not going to. You shouldn't open up the barrels that you need to sell in order to win this guy over. He did it out of his honor, and everything like this. So here he describes a lot of the cases that we have in the Gemara in this context. And even one such word, here, you know, pitoy is the word, it's the same word that means to seduce. You're trying to win somebody over in a way, you know, the whole language of seduction is to connote that you are using your language and your charm to win somebody over, not necessarily in their own best interests. Right, so that's the connotation here. Rather, your language should only be true, v'ruach nachon, and you should have a true spirit, v'leiv tahor, mikolam ol v'havos. So fine. So here you have a lot of interesting things to notice. And as Ari mentioned, it's just the very location is itself interesting before you get into the language. But there's really a lot to pay attention to in these Rambams. So the Rambam basically is coming from our Gemara in both places, right? That's clear. He's taking the examples from our Gemara. These are not dinim that happen to sound similar but are coming from different places in Shas. This is the same examples for the most part. Almost everything the Rambam said in both places can be found in our Gemara, Chulin Daf Tzadi Dalet, but he codifies it in two places. So one place in Hilchos Deos, where he's talking about what kind of person you should be. And there it seems to be, and clearly the language, the extra words that he contextualizes it with, is that you shouldn't be a dishonest person. You have to be very careful to be the same thing inside and outside, and not represent yourself differently. And in the context of Hilchos Mechiros, so he's talking about a more business-oriented prohibition, which seems to be more connected to Gneva, which seems to be more about that you are somehow deceiving the person in the business interaction. And even there, you still have room to wonder, what are you stealing? All the possibilities that we mentioned yesterday, are you stealing his money because you are pushing the deal through under false circumstances? Are you stealing credit through the transaction, even though he's getting exactly what he's paying for? All of that is still open to question in the Rambam's language, but it's a fascinating representation here that here you have the same din, but the Rambam separating it out seems to be really explicitly separating it out into components, that it has a component of Sheker and it has a component of Gneva, and both of them have their place in Mishneh Torah, and both of them require our attention. And it's also noteworthy that when the Gemara emphasizes that this is something which applies whether you're dealing with a Jew or a non-Jew, so certainly from the Rambam's language, it seems like this is true for both aspects. That it's true from the honesty aspect, you have to be honest with everyone. And it's true from the monetary commerce aspect, that is a part of how you have to carry out your business with everyone. There isn't any room, certainly within the Rambam's language, to distinguish and say one is talking about one kind of population and one isn't. So that's also something that is important to emphasize. It's interesting to note that there's a comment to the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish has a number of svarim that are well known, but one of the Svarim, it's different from his Svarim on Gemara and Halacha. He has the Sefer Emuno Bitachon. If you're familiar, it's been translated into English, where he talks about what those concepts mean. And in the third parak of the Sefer Emuno Bitachon, so he talks about the whole episode of Shimon and Levi and Shechem. And there's a lot of debate among the Rishonim that we know Shimon and Levi, so they executed the city of Shechem because of the attack on Dinah. And the Rishonim have different impressions as to whether what they did was justified or not. And the Rambam, it sounds like in Mishneh Torah, like they were justified. And the Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, so he makes several objections. Among them, it doesn't sound from the Psukim like Yaakov was too happy with them. Yaakov criticizes them at the moment. He criticizes them again in Parshas Vayechi. So what's going on? Were they justified? Were they not justified? So the Chazon Ish highlights one element of the story specifically. And want to guess what that element might be in light of what we're talking about? So it's the fact that they spoke and they acted deceptively. Right? They said to the pity people of Shechem, oh, we'll marry you, we'll merge our families, but we just need you to have a bris milah. So once they did that and they were compromised in terms of their strength and their ability to fight back, so then they went in and attacked. So Chazon Ish has this idea that what was the real criticism here, what they do worst, even if there was some kind of justification for going after them, still they should have done it honestly. And to have done it deceptively, that was a violation. It's a very interesting application. So this idea that there are two types and two focuses of Gnevas Das, and they might both be true, that there is an aspect of Sheker, and there is an aspect of how it affects commerce. And that could be true within the Rambam, and it could be true within others as well. So it's interesting. So let's try to figure this out. So what if you're going to separate them out into two parts? Right, one, the idea that you're not being absolutely honest if you are machzik tov b'chinam, and the idea that your commerce and your business dealings are not 100% just. So out of those two averos, is one worse than the other? Is one more obviously problematic than the other? Is there any room to distinguish? Yeah, Ari?
I mean, in the sense that stealing seems to be the more objective violation and lying more of a subjective, you know, due to some circumstances, lying might be, you know, even permissible or even encouraged, but stealing seems to be an objective noting of the occurrence.
Okay, so I think you're on the right track with that. Benji, what would you like to say?
One is more on the basis of yourself. Like, lying is more of a problem. Maybe we're trying to focus on yourself. Like, when he's talking about Hoseos, because Hoseos is more focused on changing yourself and stuff, while stealing is more on how you're acting with the outside world, how other people are with you.
Okay, so that's an interesting point. Does that make one better or worse? Which one is worse?
I would say you could probably judge it both ways. You could say that.
I hear that. I think you're right. You could probably see it both ways. I think your point is well taken. And also that you're right, it can go both ways. So let's try to think about this for a second. So why is it interesting to try to consider if one is worse than the other? So, again, is that a raised hand or a raised pencil? So the question of why one might be worse than the other, so it could be relevant to a couple things. First of all, if we're going to assume that some versions are Daraisa and some versions are Darabanan, so then there might be a distinction to draw along those lines. And that's something to consider. Also, some of the distinctions we made among the Heterim. So for example, to say ihu ate anafshe, right? To say if he fools himself, so does that help or not? So the Gemara says it helps. If he fooled himself, then it helps. But we pointed out that that sits better with us from a sheker perspective than it does from a geneva perspective. Because, okay, it's not intentional deception if somebody comes to a conclusion on his own and you didn't do anything to make that happen. But from a geneva perspective, to take something that's not yours, so if it's not yours, you shouldn't take it regardless of how it came your direction. So we mentioned yesterday that that kind of logic seems to fit better with sheker than with geneva. So it might make a difference. It could be that if we put this together, we could say that, as some of you have intuited, so presumably the geneva component is worse. Right? The geneva component, where you are more about victimizing somebody else, and the way it might be integrated into a commerce relationship, that's the bigger Aveira here. And that's really where our Gemara is starting from, which is important too. But our Gemara is starting from it in the context of selling meat and making sure that you're representing the meat accurately. And then the Gemara brings, the Brisa brings other examples. So our starting point is the commerce context. And maybe that is indeed the greater offense. And even from a perspective of sheker, it's true, because sheker has its own set of hierarchies and its own set of levels. But we mentioned the other day that there is some debate, the prohibition, midvar sheker tirchak, how much does it cover? So it seems pretty fair to say that a sheker that hurts someone else is worse than a sheker that doesn't hurt someone else. And a sheker that you get something from somebody else is worse than a sheker where you're not telling the truth, but it's not having a negative impact on someone. So it makes sense to say here also, if we have these two components, so on the one hand, the Rambam Hilchos Deis, you have to be completely honest all the way. But in the context of Mechira, there's more to it, that especially if you're lack of complete integrity, you know, the word integrity in English we use to mean honest, but it comes from the word meaning to be complete, and that's the language the Rambam is talking about in Hilchos Deis, Piv Libo Shavin, as we find also other Rishonim using, that your mouth and your heart should be in sync, you should be complete, everything should be whole. So your lack of integrity is another way of saying dishonesty, because you're not complete. So that becomes even worse when it has a negative impact on someone else. So it could be that you could, for those who say something is drabanan, you know, it could be that a lack of complete consistency, the later examples of don't pressure somebody for a meal and the like, those are drabanan examples. And in the commerce context, it's daraisa. And it's interesting to note, especially, that some of the Rishonim on Ardaf say that the prohibition on Ardaf is only true in the context of business. And then you have to figure out how the later examples relate to that. But that we don't have the prohibition by a matana. So, for example, if you are going to give a gift, let's say you're going to give non-kosher meat as a gift to your non-Jewish neighbor, and you don't tell him that it's non-kosher. So is that also what our Gemara is prohibiting? Our Gemara is coming from the context that you're selling the meat. So they're coming from a context of mechira. Let's say you are giving it as a gift. Do we care as much? So the Ritva, which I wasn't able to send you, the Ritva says explicitly it's the same thing. Mechir and matana. But a lot of the Rishonim on the Daf say, no, that din is only by Mechira, where there is a greater concern, presumably, of a Geneva component. So drawing the distinction might make a difference. And it might affect something else also. And this has to do with the parameters of Ihu Ate Anafshe. As we mentioned yesterday, that's one of the heterim, if the person fools himself. So one question we have to ask is just practically, what does that mean? So does that mean as long as I don't say something overtly false and he draws a wrong conclusion, I'm okay? Or does it have to be more than that, that I have no intent to deceive at all? And this person just comes to an unjustified conclusion. So if you see, this is also an issue in the Rishonim. And if you look carefully at the Rashis on these Gemaras, you may notice some interesting things on this also. So if I don't say Beferish, something false, is that enough? So let's say, for example, the Gemara gives us examples like, if I open up a barrel of wine and I give my guest the impression that I'm doing it just for him. So am I saying anything there? So the Rishonim have different takes on that. Some Rishonim say, because of the Ihu Ate Anafshe Gemara, that if I don't say anything and I just open up this barrel of wine, and he decides to read into it, wow, he's treating me in high style, that's not my problem. So the Gemara must mean, when it says you can't do that, the Gemara must mean that you're saying something. That you're saying, oh, look how well I treat you, look what I've done for you, I'm opening up a big bottle, big barrel for you. It's only if I say so, that's a problem. But if I just do it and he comes to his own conclusion, then it's not my problem. How else could you interpret it? Because what about, how does Ihu Ate Anafshe work if you don't assume that you have to say something misleading? So then where does Ihu Anafshe come in? So I think presumably you'd have to say it's a matter of degree. Rafi, did you want to say something? Presumably you have to say it's a matter of degree, that we have to try to evaluate. There are certain situations that are inherently misleading, whether you mean to or not, and then you have to spell out what's going on. While maybe the Gemara about Ihu Ate Anafshe is more an unreasonable assumption. So if you're walking in the street and somebody sees you and says, oh my gosh, I think you're coming to visit me, you're coming to greet me, it's so nice of you to do that, or the example we gave about the hospital, that this you were innocently leaving the hospital, and somebody else in a different room called out to you and said, oh, I can't believe you came just to visit me. So maybe the point is, in those cases, it's an unreasonable assumption. So if somebody wants to look at a set of facts and come to a conclusion that's not justified, okay, so then that's not your problem. But if it's an inherently misleading kind of thing, it's very unusual for somebody to open up a barrel in front of his guests unless he's really trying to honor them. So then maybe there's a greater expectation of spelling out what's going on. So when we plug it back into the whole two-category thing, so maybe we'll draw a distinction for that purposes. That maybe we should say that when you're selling something, so we have a higher standard of honesty, essentially, that the meeting of the minds between the two parties has to be really perfect. So if you are going to enter into a business transaction with someone, we require a full disclosure, or at least reasonable full disclosure. So it's important that you not cheat the person monetarily, first and foremost. You can't tell him it's worth more than it is and take that greater value. And we're saying here, And that would have already been onah, and Gnei Vastas is a bigger chiddush, that even if you're taking the proper price, but you still can't mislead them as far as giving a greater incentive by saying that it's worth more than it is and you're getting a good deal. That also goes to the honesty of the transaction. And then, following that path, we could say that even if you're not saying anything to create that impression, but you understand that the likely reality is that the purchaser has wrong information, he thinks this is a rarer opportunity than it is, or he thinks this is a special deal, I better chop this now because I'm getting this $10 sandal for $8. So even if that's unspoken, but if that's the understanding between the two, or the misunderstanding between the two, maybe that's a problem. While when it's not a monetary transaction, when it's not business, if it's just in a stam social interaction, that somebody might think you're a little nicer than you are, so then we might say, okay, then it's only if you said something to make them think that. But if they draw their own conclusion on their own, so then maybe that's less of a concern. And it's also noteworthy, there are some who draw deraisa derabanan distinction along those lines, that to say something misleading is gneivas das deraisa. But what the derabanan added was that even if you're not saying something, but there is a lack of real understanding between the two parties because of some unspoken thing, then you have to spell it out. Everyone follow where we're going here? So essentially, defining the two territories, the business-oriented Gnei Vistas and the honesty-oriented Gnei Vistas, and suggesting that the business aspect is worse, so that allows for a couple of distinctions. Maybe for one to be deraisa, maybe not. But also maybe for an even higher standard by business. When it comes to business, you can't allow any misunderstanding, spoken or unspoken. And when it comes to not a business context, then you have a different standard. If it's spoken deception, that's a bigger problem. If it's a passive kind of deception, that's less of a problem. Now, if you want to shave it down even more finely, so yes, the Gemara gave that example. The Gemara gave two examples of somebody fooling himself. One example was Marzutra being greeted by these two Rabbanim. So there it was not a business context at all and totally something that he came to on his own. But the Gemara does give another example because the Gemara does plug this back in to, at least in one possibility, to when you are selling the meat to a non-Jew and it doesn't have the gid removed. So that's a business context. So does that contradict what we're saying? Not necessarily, because even within business, we could break it down into two parts. We could break it down to where the item is presented as a better deal, and therefore maybe we have to worry that the purchaser is only buying it because he thinks he's getting a great deal. And this kind of situation where the meat is still whatever it is, but at least the way Rashi interpreted it, that the meat is still the same meat it would have been. But he's going to feel warm and fuzzy towards the seller because, oh, the seller is giving him this meat that he could have eaten. So that's still more of a social deception rather than the commerce deception, because it doesn't affect the quality of the food. It just affects the appreciation he has for the seller. So maybe even in a business context, you could break it down into two parts. Does that make sense? Everybody with me? Okay, so to consider how some of the other applications might apply. So, first of all, as we mentioned yesterday, that sheker, we have a heter for shalom, which will define for these purposes if it's more beneficial for the person who you are lying to, or who you are being less than fully honest to. And in Geneva, we don't. So it's interesting. What would you say about the following case? Let's say you are in charge of a charitable fund. There are people who all donate to a fund for tzedakah to support needy Talmidei Chachamim. You're going to support Torah scholars who are in need of assistance with this fund. And you're in charge of that. So you get to give out the money. And there's a certain Talmud Chacham who could use some help from this fund, but you don't think he's going to take it. You think that he doesn't want to have tzedakah. So you figure, instead of telling him it's from the tzedakah fund, you'll say, listen, I'm a big fan of your work. I'd like to give you a gift from my pocket. And you give him the money, claiming that it is a gift from you rather than from the donations to the tzedakah fund from the community. What do you think about that? What would you think about that kind of a situation? Gidon, you're raising your hand?
Yeah, could it be that a matana is different? I think the Rush made mention of potential difference by matana.
Yes, so that, like we said before, that was a machlokas rishonim, right? So there is such a possibility that we have a different standard by matana than we do for mechira, so that might help. Yeah, Ari?
Can't you just make the same differentiation and say that if you think that Geneva's das stems from stealing, then this categorizes misappropriation of funds, but if it's, you know, just about lying, then at the end of the day, you're doing something which the means are justified by the end, so therefore it could be permissible.
Okay, so I think you're all on the right track, so let's discuss that for a second. So, first of all, just to clarify with the issue, we can call it misappropriation of funds, because going the right place, the issue was potential Geneva's das. Right, the funds are going where they're supposed to be going. The funds are supposed to go to Nidi Talmidei Chachamim. The problem is that there's a potential Geneva's Das issue. Because when the recipient gets this money, so if he knows it's from a fund, from the donations that everyone put towards tzedakah, okay, so then thank you for choosing me, but he knows that it came from everyone's donations. But when the donor here pretends that he's the donor, when he says it's coming out of my pocket, he's going to get much more credit than he deserves. Right? If it's just his job to allocate everyone else's donations, he's basically saying that here, this gift that I am passing on to you actually came out of my pocket. Right? So he's misrepresenting where the money came from. And in doing so, he is claiming much more credit for himself. He's claiming this was a donation, when really it was a donation from other people. So on the surface, that should be a very significant Geneva's Das consideration. So the question is, could that Geneva's Das be justified because it helps the person who he is talking to? The person who he's deceiving, it is, so to speak, for his own good. So I think Ari correctly said that maybe it depends. If we're talking about Geneva's Das as Geneva, so it's harder to justify based on that logic. But if we're talking about it from a Sheker perspective, we do have that kind of logic in the context of Sheker. So to look at this more specifically, so first of all, so Gidon's point that it's not a Mechira context, so that already might be reason to see it differently. That if we're not looking at it with a potential selling of an item under false pretenses, maybe we should distinguish along those lines and saying that if you're selling somebody something and you're fooling them about how good of a deal it is, that we shouldn't allow even for their own good. But if there is no aspect of that, it's just that you're getting credit, so then maybe we could be more open to allowing it b'pnei hashalom. Now, it's interesting. So this scenario, I didn't make it up. It's discussed in probably a lot of places, but one place it's discussed. So in the one contemporary sefer of Shilas and Chuvas, the Chuvas Shevet HaKahasi. It's written by the Belzer Dayan, Rav Shammai Kahas Gross. So he discusses this scenario. And he writes there that it's mutter. Because he says this is all just a detail of Sheker. And Sheker is mutter b'nei hashalom. So therefore it's okay. So based on what we're saying, it's really taking one side in the issue. But maybe it's a fair take in this particular case. But taking one side of the issue that it's Mishum Sheker, and therefore it should be subject to the rules of Sheker, which should allow for a heter if you are benefiting the person who you are deceiving. All you're trying to do here is to protect his kavod and to get him assistance that he's not going to take otherwise, so the ends should justify the means. Now, I think that's a fair position to take. Just mention a technical problem with it. It's that when we first started talking about these positions, so we mentioned the Ritva and others who tie it to Geneva, and many other Rishonim tie it to Geneva. The Rishon who most explicitly connects it to Sheker, specifically, is Rabbeinu Yonah. Right? You saw that Rabbeinu Yonah was on the list the first day? So Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari Tshuva, so he sees it specifically as a Sheker issue. The Rambam we saw today seems to have both. But if you see it as a Sheker issue, so this should flow. Okay, L'shanus b'pnei hashalom. To say something dishonest for the sake of peace should be okay. The technical problem is that Rabbeinu Yonah himself in Shari Tshuva says differently, just for the record. That Rabbeinu Yonah, when he talks about the idea of Lishanos v'pnei Hashalom, the idea that you're allowed to compromise the truth for the sake of peace, so there's a lot to say about this, not really our sugya, but it's just intersecting here, but Rabbeinu Yonah has a very limited application of that idea. And he writes that there are 9 categories of Sheker. It's just, if you want to know how many different ways you can be dishonest with people, if you're looking for a few more. So the Rabbeinu Yonah breaks it down into 9 categories. There's 9 ways in which you can deceive. And he sorts them through different factors. So if you are hurting someone, that's worse than if you're not hurting someone. And if you are benefiting, so then that's worse than if you're just saying something false that you're not benefiting from. So, to combine the two, let's say if I defraud you, I lie to you and I take your money, so then that's a whopper of a lie because I am both hurting you through my lie and I am profiting. So Rabbeinu Yonah would put that in a very high category of a bad kind of lie. As opposed to if I just say the sky is green for some reason, so I'm not hurting anyone, presumably, unless it affects how you pilot or something, or your picnic decisions, but it doesn't hurt you, and I probably don't get anything out of it either. So he happens to write that Gnevas Das, working under the assumption that there's some benefit to you from the credit, so he writes Gnevas Das is a category that is not Mutter Mipnei Hashalom. So it's a technical problem with this application, because he says the only heter, the talai mipnei hashalom, is when there's no benefit to you at all. So Rabbeinu Yonah, the proponent of the Sheker model of Gnevas Das, also creates a technical problem for us by saying that it does not actually have the heter of using that mipnei hashalom. So that's an interesting thing to think about. And I just saw in a sefer, so in a few weeks it'll be Parshas Shlach. And we know the whole story of the Meraglim. And the Meraglim, as we know, there were 12, or at least 12, and it broke down into 10 and 2, 10 bad ones and 2 good ones. So Kalev was part of that team, but he was the good guy. He was the spy within the spies. And he was, the, I guess, the double agent, because he was the good guy on the spy team. So in that context, the Pasuk says, when the Meraglim are giving their report, so the Pasuk says that Kalev quieted them down because of Moshe, to allow Moshe to speak. And if you look at Rashi on that Pasuk, so Rashi says that he kind of fooled them, that, you know, he played on their attitudes. He said, yeah, look what this guy Moshe has done to us. So they all quieted down because they all wanted to get in on the attack of Moshe. And then he goes on to say, yeah, look what he did to us. He took us out of Mitzrayim, and he split the sea, and he's been feeding us. So basically he got them quiet by pretending he's part of the attack, and then he lured them into praising Moshe or to respecting Moshe. So I saw a sefer that said, so it's not pi v'libo shavin, it's not honest, it's gnevus das. What about chulin daf tzadi dalet? To bring somebody in under false pretenses and then take him in a different direction. So he leaves it, so the author of the sefer raises that question, so he leaves it, b'tzarechin. So how could Kalev do this? It's against our gemara and chulin. So it prompts the question, is there a ends justifies the means Fari here, that he's doing it for a good reason, he's doing this to resolve the situation peacefully, to bring things in a more peaceful, respectful direction? Does that justify it? Or do we say no, that that's also dishonest, also a kind of gnevus das, and we shouldn't allow it? So I'll give you another case now to consider. This is a case I was asked about in real life. Tell me what you think about the following case, because this, I think, addresses another one of the heterim of the Gemara that we haven't mentioned yet. So we've mentioned so far two heterim from the Gemara, right? One that if you're acting for the covet of the person or the benefit of the person, and two, if they came to the conclusion on their own. The third one we haven't really mentioned yet. So it affects the following scenario. I was asked the following. Let's say there was a tzedakah organization. And the way fundraisers work very often is that they call attention to their donors. And they do so in a hierarchical way. Let's say they print a journal or they have a plaque on the wall and they give more attention to the bigger donors and less attention to the lower level donors. The idea of giving attention to donors in general, just in case you're thinking, so gaiva, and you know, why should somebody show off? So it's an interesting balance, because you're right that we do promote modesty, and the Rambam says the highest level of tzedakah is to give anonymously. But the counterbalance is you also want to inspire other people to give tzedakah. If they know that they also could get some kavod, it's going to help. So that is interesting, because there's a value behind that. Many quote the tshuva Sarashba. The Rashba in his tshuva says that mitzvah lefarsem osei mitzvah, it's a mitzvah to publicize those who do mitzvahs like tzedakah. And he quotes, sounds like a chazal, that Reuven, in Parshas Vayeshev, when the whole episode happens with Yosef, so the pasuk says that Reuven saved Yosef. But it wasn't much of a salvation, he still got sold into slavery. So the Rashba quotes this language, that if Reuven had known that the Torah was going to write about what he did that day for posterity, the whole world would always know about it that day, he would have picked Yosef up and put him on his shoulders and marched him back home. That, in other words, people are more motivated when they realize they're getting attention for what's going on, and we should work with that. So there is such an idea that publicizing people who do mitzvos is, even if you want to be modest, but it's good for other people. So tzedakah organizations often do this. They have, you know, different levels. So there's the silver donors and the gold donors and the platinum donors, whatever it is. So they have different levels. So let's say this is not an uncommon kind of scenario. Let's say you have somebody who's been donating to this tzedakah for a few years, and he is always there on the top level, platinum. Right, he always gets the highest status. And this year he calls you up. You're the head of the stock organization. He says, listen, I'm having a bad year. Right? Unfortunately, this is a part of what the world is dealing with now. A lot of people who were big Bali stock are not necessarily in the same position. So he says, I'm having a bad year. I cannot make a donation on the same level this year as I do at all the previous years. Hopefully next year I'll be back on my feet and I'll be able to again. But these past few years I was, now I can't. But I'm asking you, I want you to list me on the top level anyway. Keep me on the platinum stature, even though I'm not actually donating at platinum levels. Are you allowed to do it? What would you say? What do you think? You're allowed to do that? So, what are the tzadim here? What are the sides? Yeah, Rafi?
Meaning leaving him up still high would maybe make other donors see like, oh, well, like this guy, like even though he's having like a little bit of a tough year, he still decided to give him that same side of inspiration.
And therefore what?
Or maybe leave him.
Okay, so what you just described is the motive, but it's not a heter. So I'll explain why in a second. Levi, you want to say something?
No, don't, because that same motivation is also causing other people to end up losing money, losing money as well, because see other people are also having a rough year, then they see what they think is somebody else still giving. They're going to be compelled to give, even though they can't.
They'll feel pressured to give. Yeah.
Yes.
It's interesting. You're both assuming here that people know that this guy's having a hard time, which is not necessarily a part of the background here. But your points are well taken. But it's not necessarily the case that people know. So let's talk about this in three stages. First of all, what are the motivations here? So there's motivations on both sides, right? The donor wants his name up there because he doesn't want to be embarrassed that he's not at the same level, and he wants the credit. You know, he has a couple of reasons why he would want this. Why would he want to be listed as a platinum donor even if he's not platinum donating? We could understand why he wants it. And we could also understand why the stalker might want it, because, as has been pointed out, so if you're going to inspire others and it brings them some more stature that this guy is donating on such a level, or that people in general are donating on such a level, so that is going to help them overall. So there is mutual benefit here. Right? We could see that, we could understand why both parties would want this, and why there might be a temptation. However, that is not a justification for either side. Because certainly it's not a justification from the donor side, because just because he wants the credit, so it doesn't mean that there is any halachic appropriateness for that. But also, even from the stucker, you might think it's a little bit more appropriate, because they're not looking out for their own glory, they're looking to raise money for some justified cause. So maybe you might think it's justified. But we should emphasize that that's not a justification. We do not allow stucca to be raised through dishonest means. It's a very important point to point out, because it's not always followed in practice, and there are some scandalous examples. So it's important to emphasize that the halacha does not allow charitable fundraising under false pretenses. And you could figure this out logically. There are gemaras that probably say it beferish. If that was our sugya, we could talk about it in more detail. But that's the bottom line. You cannot raise money for tzedakah under false pretenses. And even though it might sound justified, the halacha doesn't recognize a heter for that at all. So we understand the motives on both sides. We understand the donor's motive, but that's not a basis for a heter. We understand the stalker's motive, and it's a little bit closer to justification because you're helping stalker, but still, that's not a heter, and it's dangerous to think that it is. So we shouldn't come off with the impression that anything goes in the area of stalker. So it's not looking good for this guy. And yet, I told them it was mutter. Surprise. So why? After I just gave you all the reason why it's not, why should it be mutter? So what exactly are the risks, and why should it be mutter anyway? So we said, okay, it's a risk that the donor is going to get credit he doesn't deserve, and that stalker is going to get attention, positive attention that it doesn't deserve. That's the risk. That's the problem. But the reason I think it's mutter is because in both cases, they do deserve it. So let's say the donor. So the donor, for all the past years, he has been donating at this level. So the fact that people will think, oh, he's a generous guy who donates at a platinum level, he is a generous guy who donates at a platinum level. And when he's able to, he does. Happens to be that this year, he's not in a position to, but he has proven that when he is in a position to, he does. Ben? It's Benny or Benji? Benny, it's called?
Benny.
Yeah.
Shouldn't that be true about, like, everyone then? But, like, anyone who might have been in that position might have also given at a platinum level.
So that's a fair question, but all the more so, you know, there is a certain package of assumptions that come with that, but certainly somebody who has done it, right? Somebody who has proven, it's not just anyone, you're right, that anyone could say, oh, if I could, I would. But here, he's shown that he would, because when he was in the position, he actually did. So we can say more securely that we know that when he could, he would. So if now he's held back because of circumstances, there isn't any false impression that's being created. And that you have in our Gemara, because our Gemara says explicitly that the situation, let's say, because it says a few times, let's say that case about Rav Safra and Rava meeting up with Bar Zutra, and when Rava didn't want to say that, oh, we were just walking anyway, we weren't coming to be mechabed you. So part of his explanation is that I would have come had I known that you were approaching, I would have come to meet you. It happens to be, I didn't know. But I don't have to tell you that, in addition to the fact you're not looking to hurt anybody's feelings. But also, it is true. So you're giving me credit as somebody who would make the trip to come greet you at the door. I would have done it. So there isn't any material gain coming here that's false. And the fact that this donor is getting a reputation as being generous, he is generous. He's just right now not able, this is not an example of it. Like, let's say you have somebody who goes to the hospital every day to visit people, to do Bikur Cholim. And one day he's walking to the hospital just because he left his bag there the day before. And somebody else sees him going into the hospital and says, oh, you're going to go visit people, you're such a tzaddik, what a Baal Chesed you are. So does he have to say, well, actually, no, I'm just going to pick up my bag? So presumably not, because right now, fine, he wasn't going to actually visit any patients. But he does. It's not a false credit that he's getting. It's what he does every other day. So the impression that's being created that he's somebody who does this is accurate. Happens not to be what's going on at the moment. But it's still a fair reputation that he's getting. And that should work both ways. Because for the tzedakah organization also, so they're getting the boost that they get from the fact that this donor, his name is on the top of the list, and people will be inspired by that. So yes, if that was a false impression, that would be problematic. But it's not false, it's true that when he's able, he does give it that level. And they have gotten donations from him at this level. So the fact that it's not true this year, it's not any kind of a material misrepresentation. Now, still, you might say, okay, but isn't it a little bit? Because, okay, you're saying he gave all of the past 10 years and he only gave 9 out of the 10 years. Or you're saying that they get every year and they only get 9 out of 10 years. So still a little bit degree of Gnevis Das here. So why shouldn't we avoid even that much? Right? The Rambam says, afilu mila achas, even one word. So here you can combine it with the fact that there is another motivation here. And that is, he's trying to avoid the embarrassment. He's not trying to get extra credit. He's trying not to be embarrassed that this should be the one year that he's not on there. He's trying to avoid a negative impression rather than to get extra points. And that, you find, just to support the idea, you might be familiar, there's a Gemara Maseches Ksubis. It's a very outlandish sounding Gemara. It's, maybe you've heard of it. The Gemara says, the Pasuk says in Re'eh, we would have read it on Shavuos, that you're supposed to give to an Ani, Staka de Machsoro, give him whatever he's missing. And the Gemara has these very extreme examples that it refers to somebody who lived at a certain standard and had a downfall financially, so you should keep supporting him at that standard. And the Gemara gives this extreme example. If he had a whole entourage, if he had servants who ran in front of him, you should provide him servants to run in front of him. Pretty extreme ideas. So there's a lot of commentary, as you could imagine, about that. But the Meiri writes that whole idea of supporting him at his former level, so it's not forever. You don't have to support him at the level of a rich man for his whole life. That we're talking about the initial phase here, where it's not known that he's had this financial downfall, and he's embarrassed, and to protect him from the public embarrassment, so then you should treat him publicly the same way in order to save him from that. So this is a source that this is a halachic value, that to protect somebody from the embarrassment that they may feel at being in a different economic status than they were used to, that's something that we do try to help with. So that creates the justification here also. So there's no motive for extra Gnevis Das here. You're not trying to get extra credit for the stucco or for the guy. You're just trying to save him this embarrassment, which the halacha itself advocates doing. And therefore, I think, put all that together, it's justified. Does that make sense? And I'll just give one much simpler example, but just of this idea. So, but this also kind of happens all the time. Remember, I went to a shiva far away. The people were sitting shiva an hour or so away from my house. But so I wanted to go, but I combined it when I needed to be in that neighborhood anyway. And when I went to the shiva, I said, oh, I can't believe you drove all this distance just to make the shiva call. So I didn't say to them, well, actually, no, don't feel so flattered. I was in the neighborhood anyway. And in addition to the other reasons we're talking about why I didn't say that, is because I would have come just for them if I didn't have anything else to do. So I still would have come anyway. Once I was going, so I combined it with the other things I was doing. But if I didn't have those other things, I still would have come. So to whatever extent they're feeling, oh, I can't believe you made the trip, I was ready to make the trip. It just happened to be in that situation, it wasn't only for them. So that, again, is explicitly in the Gemara. The Gemara has it over here a few times, that if this is something you would do, and the Gemara mentions it also in the context of opening the barrel of wine, that if the wine is sold, but you still would have opened it one way or another, either way, you would have opened it for this chashuva guest. Happens to be that you also found a way to cover the rest of the wine, so fine, but if you didn't, you still would have done it. So again, that's not a Dave Gnevis Das consideration. All right, so we're about overtime, so just to quickly recap, we spoke about some applications of the different understandings of Sheker and Gneva. We talked about how the Rambam seems to have both in two distinct contexts, but both clearly coming from our Gemara. We talked about how you could distinguish between the two, and we all seem to agree that in the commerce context, it's more severe than in the more social context, and maybe there are distinctions deraisa derabanan, spoken, not spoken, etc. We explained why that would be. We talked about the Chazanish, about Shechem, and the like. And then we talked about some practical applications of these scenarios. We talked about whether you can deceive a recipient of tzedakah to tell him it's coming from you and not from the tzedakah, and how from a sheker perspective that should be justified. From a gedev it's more complicated, and how the irony is that the Rabbeinu Yonah, who says that sheker, though it's not going to work for him because he also says that sheker is not, is only allowed for shalom if it's completely without any benefits, and gedev das is not included. And we talked about this more elaborate situation of potential misrepresentation in a tzedakah context, where there we said that it should be justified because you are not looking to create a false impression, you're looking just to prevent the embarrassment of going in the opposite direction. And based on the Gemara here, in a few places, which says that it's not gnevas das if the impression is not supported by right now, but it would have been true, and especially if you've proven it's true in other contexts, so then that's not called gnevas das. So we have some more practical examples to fill in, a lot more business applications. So God willing, we'll continue that. I haven't decided tomorrow, I'm going to do a little bit of the parsha, maybe the percentage of how much is the parsha and how much is gnevas das, haven't decided yet, and I don't want to be gonev your das, but that's still up in the air. But one way or another, God willing, we'll meet at 11 tomorrow and do one or the other or both. All right, I wish, and again, I encourage anybody who I haven't met personally, please let me know if there's a good time to schmooze. And look forward to doing that with everyone. And you should have a fantastic day. You should stay safe and healthy.
Thank you, Rabbi.
All right, call to. Bye-bye.